Hello and welcome to Your Politics. On a week when the presidential election campaign officially kicked off, the budget was largely kept under wraps and the price of handbags became a key political topic in Leinster House. Juliet, how much was Maria Steen's?
Sorry, before you have to introduce yourself, not everyone know who you are, so maybe you should say who you are.
Okay. Thank you, because you're a presenter.
Neophyte.
Could be elevated even further in the period ahead. I'm Micheál Lehane. This is Paul Cunningham and Juliet Gash. Like the usual political
talk. I'll be the luxury goods correspondent for...
Yeah. Anyway, what do you reckon? Because I've heard it started at 5,000.
That was to 7. That was a poor estimate. No, it's at least 20,000. Hermès bag of that type, which is a Kelly bag named after Princess Grace Kelly of Monaco, would... You can get nice second-hand ones for about 18,000. New ones... The sky's the limit. I mean, honestly, 28,000 for a likely used one. I did a little bit of searching there. And
for Christmas.
It was a curious kind of thing to happen when Maria Steen had been through what was a fairly exciting kind of political 24 hours, wasn't it, in trying to get that nomination and falling short. And yet, despite making a speech that was highly critical of the political system, it was that item that became the dominant point of debate afterwards, Paul.
It's funny, it's also emblematic of a presidential election as well, where maybe the issues aren't to the foreground. Now, there was a particular issue about getting her 20 nominations from TDs and senators, but sometimes people's visions for the presidency can get lost and people can get distracted and then they'll pick up on something else. This was that example of the bag. Usually men don't usually intrude on issues of bags in which they know nothing about. But I thought...
That yesterday though, because all politicians around here seem to have a different value, didn't they?
That was one thing. Well, they know a bit more. Yeah. So yes, the value was certainly being discussed. But it was something which then just gave way. And it gave way, if you did go online last night, into all of the recrimination, all of the bile, all of the abuse, which was being directed at a number of independent senators. That's logical because Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil have a candidate, all the left parties have a candidate. So the independents were in the firing line. People like Michael McDougall, people like Gerard Crockwell, and people like Victor Boyan, because they were resisting. They were not going to sign on the nomination line. And that meant for those who were supporting Ms. Steen online, an awful lot of attack after the event and before the event, an awful lot of pressure being applied on them, but they didn't buckle.
And of course, I mean, it is different this time now, whatever way and whatever the explanations for the small field that you had five and six candidates in the election since 97. And that did make what was happening with Maria Steen kind of extremely relevant and extremely contentious as well in those hours throughout Tuesday.
Yeah, the idea that perhaps there was a bit more willingness to have, I suppose, more diverse candidates on the ticket previously, but that was when you mightn't have had Fianna Fáil in the field or Fine Gael in the field, and when such big parties have got a candidate, and then Sinn Féin is obviously rolling behind Catherine Connolly, so that the three big parties have, you know, skin in the game, and their members weren't going to be able to nominate people, so that changed the rules a bit. Is it fair to say it's undemocratic to sign someone's nomination papers if you don't agree with them? I mean, I think people should have a right to disagree with someone and then maybe say they won't support them. But then the counter argument is that you are just giving them the ability to put themselves forward, and then they'll argue their case on their own merit.
Yeah, and that was the letter that councillors sent to independent politicians here, wasn't it, Paul, saying we are facilitators in all of this. But I saw an interesting discussion between two old buddies, Lucinda Creighton and Leo Varadkar, on Twitter of all places about this. Lucinda Creighton talking about why on earth wouldn't people back Maria Steen's nomination, and then Leo Varadkar pointing out that she herself had contested many elections and he couldn't envisage a situation where she would have got a nomination where someone wasn't supporting her.
Yeah, and then like this bluff and double bluff. I was hearing today that some of the councillors who signed the letters making demands of independent senators that they do back Ms. Steen, then making contact today to say that they didn't really mean that and I'm sorry for putting them under pressure. So there's all sorts of shenanigans going on. But ultimately, the bottom line is the bottom line, which is there are three candidates. And, you know, for Ms. Steen, I think the general view was that had she started earlier and had a concerted campaign, the outcome might have been different. Certainly if it had been more engagement rather than instruction when it came to securing those TDs and senators to support her.
And on that, so Juliet, wasn't there the sense that this was being played out online? A lot of people who were being lobbied felt that they were being lobbied in a certain way, a highly critical way, as a euphemous way of saying it, online. So that rather than old-fashioned handshaking and meetings seem to be a huge part in this campaign.
Absolutely. And, you know, people don't like being hectored or they don't like the sense of a pile-on. And again, no one's suggesting that Maria Steen was behind the pile-on or the pressure, but people reported disliking how they felt they were coming under pressure. And it appeared to be bots in some instances. It appeared to be all sort of a concerted campaign of you better do this or, you know, you're anti-democracy. And maybe a more lengthy campaign. But I mean, you know, I spoke to councillors in Kerry who said that they were very impressed by Gareth Sheridan because he went down and he did that. Yeah. He shook hands, he sat down and had a cup of tea and he got two local authorities, which for a relatively unknown person was good going in this particular campaign, which is very different to other campaigns.
And I suppose the election itself now is underway, but it is interesting that we have to talk about all this other stuff at the start because the campaign itself is extremely low-key. Could it be the most low-key, and again, that's a euphemous word, election we've ever seen?
Well, once we see your laser-like focus, those incredible questions piling in the camera, it's just going to be illuminated, obviously. Yeah.
Well, Jim Gavin is very energetic, as he reminds us in every answer.
Yes. He's going to have a new answer, and he needs to have a new answer pretty fast. I mean, just in relation to his candidacy, he's the only one of the three candidates who's not had an official campaign launch, and I really feel he has to use that. We're beginning to see around Jim Gavin a few more people, a few more footballers helping him put up posters, and his family, and I think he needs to use that launch as a springboard, because at the moment it's beginning to sound a little bit familiar and we're only on day one.
Familiar too from Heather Humphreys though, isn't it, Juliet? I mean, what is it? Community and
unity, opportunity. Is that it? Yeah, nice, right. Nice ring to it, I suppose.
It's up there with Enda Kenny's best country in the world to do business in and all that stuff.
Yeah, and again, but this is the problem as well with the role of president. You know, what, you know, we all know it's largely a ceremonial role. However, all the candidates will be asked about political issues, which technically they don't have a role in. So it is a difficult hedge to straddle. Do you know what I mean? Which way do you lean? Obviously, I mean, we were talking about it earlier, the drive time interviews on Tuesday where the candidates were pressed on certain issues. And yet they can go so far and say, criticise the fact that the homelessness issue is dreadful. And Michael D. Higgins, of course, you know, called it the scandal of our time. But would the current candidates, can they go that far? I think Catherine Connolly is probably has gone the furthest in that regard because she's not bound by the idea of criticising her backers, her party. So it's a tricky one.
Catherine Connolly has got herself into some difficulty in the sense if you have to go the next day and clarify what you've said, that is someone who's having a tricky day, isn't it?
It's a tricky day, and yet maybe she would counter it this way, which is Catherine Connolly is doing what Catherine Connolly does. She's not changing for the election. You see her, it's what you get, and there's no difference between her today than it was, you know, 5 years ago. I think what we anticipate, though, is that to win a general election, you've got your core vote, but you have to get more, that you have to get that middle ground. That means sometimes softening your message or at least an appealing and making a nod. And that doesn't seem to be coming for Catherine Connolly. So I just wonder what that will mean ultimately over the course of the election. If she remains where she is and says, like me or lump me, does that effectively mean she misses out on capturing a wider vote, which wouldn't come to her naturally?
And Juliet, she's doing something which is kind of unusual as well for someone who's in a big race like this, that she spent the morning in Leinster House doing her work on the Public Grounds Committee, but then getting back to a campaign rally later on. I mean, is it wise?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think if there were a Venn diagram of the three candidates, she wouldn't overlap the same way the other two do. Is that going to be her unique selling point that she has got? You know, she's a working TD. She's doing this. She has different opinions on lots of topics. But yes, she probably could have given herself a bit of a break by not turning up for the day job and doing this. But again, that doesn't feel like it would chime with her persona. She is a hard worker. She's always put herself forward as that, committed to her causes, committed to her beliefs. So taking a holiday to campaign might not work so well.
And what about the sense that Catherine Connolly is now the identifiable non-government candidate in this? But do you get that sense of unity despite the fact that all the parties' names are there on paper now? I mean, are the resources being put behind her? Is it that kind of united opposition candidate?
So when it comes to finance, we don't know. So parties like Sinn Féin, which have rolled in behind her, said, well, we still have to look at that. The Labour Party is taking a different tack, saying any money raised for Labour goes to Labour, but we'll send out our members a sort of a GoFundMe thing, which you can contribute to the campaign. So we either don't know or we don't know whether the campaign approach is going to work. When it comes to the actual TDs, and if, maybe if we include all three candidates in this, when it comes to Fianna Fáil, there just seems to be a little shimmer of concern. They're just not sure about whether this is going to work yet. So they too are looking for a big lift.
And is that all? Fianna Fáil TDs are more the non-Dublin brigade?
Across the board. I mean, I think Dublin is more belief than those beyond the pale, but there's a concern there. I think from Fine Gael's point of view, they feel confident and they think that, particularly when they eye up Fianna Fáil support, they think that she could be a magnet for it. So in the early stage of the campaign, they're hopeful. And then when it comes to Catherine Connolly, it just seems to me that there's different levels of support depending on the party who you're talking to. Some are saying, I'll do a bit, but like, I'm not breaking me back. And others are very convinced. If you are of the view that a united left is the most important thing, and that's the platform by which you can form an alternative government, excluding Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, then you're going to go gung-ho. If that isn't your shtick, maybe you're not.
Yeah. And I suppose, Juliette, if you look at this week, on the one hand for Micheál Martin, all his troops remained loyal and steadfast when it came to not signing Maria Steen's nomination papers. Two other things happening. That one is Jim O'Callaghan was doing leaders' questions, that prime piece of the Dáil day, and viewed by backbenchers to have done it well. As well as that, there is that decision around Micheál Martin championing Jim Gavin. If it doesn't work out and you're looking at Jim Gavin, who is exciting backbenchers in Micheál Martin's absence while he was at the UN General Assembly, it could be a tricky enough territory ahead for Micheál Martin.
Yeah, it could. I suppose it was interesting, though, that Micheál Martin kind of ended up thanking Billy Kelleher for putting himself forward and pursuing the nomination in the way he did. And he praised him as saying it opened up the competition. And
great parliamentarian.
Absolutely. Mm. And it was, again, interesting to see him at the ploughing. You know, I know we're going back to last week, but seeing him there in the tent with Jim Gavin made for it. And we're going to see those images, you know, throughout the campaign. So, yeah, it is a tricky one. But is it, you know, we've got the Taoiseach away. He's at a very important meeting of the UN General Assembly. So he's doing his world leader, you know, shtick, his role. So what's happening at home is under control. But yeah, maybe later, maybe down the line, he'll be like, I should have been there.
It's always difficult, though, isn't it, when someone is abroad, and there was a lot happening this week, but yet loyalty on the most fundamental question, Paul. But I mean, if you do look back to the last time you had three candidates, 1990, that did signal the end of one political party leader. Not say that will happen this time, but Alan Duke's case with Aston Curry, that did happen. Now, our colleague in the Mail, John Drennan, is even writing that it lit the fuse on Charlie Haughey's downfall ultimately, even though that was a very long fuse. It was quite a time coming.
Years.
But there can, in the most non-political of elections, can have serious political consequences too.
But Micheál Martin certainly invested in Jim Gavin. So it was notable that even though he was over the General Assembly in New York, he still took the time out to give Catherine Connolly a right kicking in relation to remarks she made about Hamas being part of the fabric of the Palestinian community. So absolutely studs in. Catherine Connolly has made another remark last night at UCD Students, I think it was the Political and International Association, where she was likening the increase in defence spending under Chancellor Merz to the 1930s, in other words, to the Nazi rearmament of the country. And she mentions this as sort of an economic boon that was the reason for it. But if you go back to what the Chancellor was saying in March in the Bundestag, it was on account of the US President Donald Trump signalling that he wasn't necessarily going to intervene to help Europe, and also due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So those were the stated reasons. So once again, I'd imagine that when he gets the chance, Micheál Martin will come back and go for Catherine Connolly on that in a bid to support Jim Gavin.
And there's a difficult, you know, the levelling or raising the spectre of 1930s Germany at Germans is not taken lightly. Obviously, she has her opinion and she holds that. But it's, you're getting into dangerous, dicey territory anyway.
It wasn't, I watched it and it wasn't that it was a throwaway comment. Mm. It wasn't that it was part of a speech in which she was building up to something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was something that was a casual conversation with students in which she just laid it out. But that's her style.
Yeah.
And I think for those people, voters who are concerned in relation to support for Ukraine, who are concerned about the defence forces and the absence of spending, that we don't have the numbers, that we don't have a radar, that we don't have a sonar, that we're reliant on the RAF flying over us, you know, this is going to be something which is an issue. And for Micheál Martin, who has taken all of that on board and has decided that is Fianna Fáil and the government's policy, it's too much for him not to go in and tackle her on that. So I expect him to intervene again.
Yeah.
Whether Jim Gavin actually benefits from that is another thing.
The stakes are high, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are high. And this is a clear blue water moment for Catherine Connolly this week as she talks about what is peace mean? What does peace mean? What does peace mean in the context of an aggressive state like Russia? And, you know, that takes you into sort of pretty hot territory. And we do have the first TV debate coming up on Monday. The Week of Politics will be having its debate on RTÉ1 on the 5th of October, plugging our own. And then we're going to have the primetime debate. And that type of issue can really spark off fire.
In some ways, Juliet, is it about the person in this campaign who makes the least mistakes, and it's going to be as a strategy to just try and get through it in that way and get out and about and meet as many people as possible? And when it comes to the most experienced on that front, that would be Heather Humphreys, wouldn't it? And judging by what she's doing today, that again is evident.
Yeah, I think so. It depends on who you're talking to. You know, I think Catherine Connolly has been most outspoken and consistent on Gaza and on Palestine issues. And whether that will, obviously it's very important to an awful lot of people. Are they all voters in presidential elections? So will younger people galvanise behind her, as, you know, she has not just courted that vote, she's sought it, she's gotten it. You know, she was obviously out at UCD, she's met with TCD, Students' Union as well. So will they, you know, will they be out there? Will they be voting? Or again, at the ploughing, I was speaking to people and some of the people I spoke to, I vox popped people, just asking people the question of who you're voting for. Now, it was a good bit out still. I didn't get anyone saying Catherine Connolly. It was very evident from being down there that Heather Humphreys was in her element. And I had a few people going, I'll vote for that lady from Monaghan. And you're just going, wow, that's, you know, they know who their type is, even if they don't know her name to hand. Do you know what I mean? And that, I just thought that was interesting. And Jim Gavin certainly looked a bit less comfortable. You know, he's that they're not necessarily his people. Yeah, so it'll be.
I just find, you know, that sense of having fought an election campaign, that has to put someone at an advantage, doesn't it? I mean, and Catherine Connolly and Heather Humphreys both have that. Mm. Yeah. And just being able to get through that, get through those difficult days.
And particularly sort of difficult interviews. I think that is tricky. You can know that there's going to be 5 or 6 questions and you have to give an answer, maybe giving a little bit each time, but not just repeating the same thing, but being aware that even though the pressure's on you, that the presenter is going to have to move on. And if you're Catherine Connolly, or if you're Heather Humphreys, you've been in that moment loads and loads of times. So it gives you the skill and a bit of endurance to be able to continue doing it. It's hard to overstate the fact that Jim Gavin is a political novice, that he's entering a political cauldron, that he's now going to be talking about himself. The man who said nothing is going to be talking about himself for 30 days and 30 nights. And that really is wearing, both in debates, in one-to-ones, and even talking to your local newspaper. I mean, it's just completely different from anything he's done before. It's a real challenge for the man.
Do you know what's different this time is the budget. No one's leaking or telling us what's going to be in it.
Oh, but the week after next.
Jed Nash was even critical today that it's being carried out under
secrecy.
Secrecy, secrecy.
Yeah. Yeah, a certain whiff of 2008 about it, isn't that what he said?
That's what he said.
Yeah, we have a kind of shudder.
We know that message, though, isn't it? It is one of prudence, which, again, Pascal Dunhill was talking about in the Dáil earlier.
Yeah.
Jade says it's not prudence at all. If you're listening to the Central Bank, if you're listening to the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council, the ESRI, they're all saying it's expansive, it's dangerous, and it shouldn't happen.
You're spending too much.
And then the counterpoint is, and we heard from the finance minister today, saying that it'll be 1.5 billion, because that is based on the tax returns we're going to have and an expanding economy. Bum, bum. That's it.
Yes, it is, though, extraordinary that at a time when the real things that matter to so many people, isn't it? That is your energy bills, gas, electricity, and the food bills, the groceries, they are still going up, even if inflation is not
as bad that's the
point. For the government to argue that things are very different, it's going to be a hard sell.
It is. I mean, just, you know, and again, Pascal Dunne, who was making that point earlier when he took Ludo's questions, and he was saying that, you know, things aren't rising as fast as they were, but you're still seeing your bills rise. And that is, I mean, any of us does a shop and you're like, geez, is that all I got? And is that how much that cost? Yeah. You know, we're noticing it still. And if it's not as fast as it was, it's still rising, and that's problematic. And it's going to be problematic, I would say, more so for the perceived government-backed candidates after the budget than for those who are not.
I suppose one thing, you know, in the political cycle, if you're going to do something rough, your first budget is the place to do it. And then as you save a little bit and then you loosen the purse strings as you get closer to the election, the only difference with this one is that the budget comes slap bang in the middle of the presidential campaign. And just I agree with Juliet, it'll be interesting to watch how that washes through. But it is staggering. It's amazing that we are 2 weeks out from the budget and we know sort of the broad parameters, you know, that big cut for VAT and hospitality. But usually what we call
kites. For property developers, it seems, on the apartment side. And then when you do have an increase in social welfare or pensions, it's definitely not going to be in the order of €12, which is what social protection were initially looking for. That's about as far as the knowledge goes, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And to a certain extent, that comes back to the opposition, which have chosen to go one way rather than, you know, to talk about sort of presidential election, to talk about other issues. I know that Sinn Féin will counter that they've come up with the electricity credits consistently, which they have. But on the broader budget, it's been very quiet.
OK, so if there was a phrase that defined the 1990 election, it was mature recollection. Is there any kind of phrase that you think at this point out, whether it's
Ackman's,
Hermes?
This is day one. You've got day one. I was right.
So whether it's energetic or opportunity, community. What do you think it could be? What could be the, if you were to sum it up, what you think this campaign could be in a few words?
Well, wasn't the last general election new energy? Mm-hmm. That came from a particular party. So maybe you stick with the energy one, even if it seems that it's sagging already.
American.
Hugs and Hermes. I don't know.
Hugs and Hermes. Juliet Gadabam. Juliet, thank you. Paul Cunningham. And from me, Micheál Lahan. That's it. Talk to you next week.